sound session. Donald William Morse presiding.
Be seated, please. We're on the record in 3KN 10-01295. Counsel for the state and Mr. Hague are present. We don't have Mr. Robinson yet.
He's out in the hall.
Oh, okay.
Call him?
Sure.
Can somebody call Chuck?
Mr. Robinson, would you just state your name for the record? You still under oath, however.
Yes. Arthur Robinson.
All right, Mr. Hague, you may proceed.
Hey, did I demand that you subpoena Cole to my sentencing in McGrath?
Yes.
Did you do so?
No.
You didn't never subpoenaed him?
No, I didn't. I mean, I may have subpoenaed him and then released him. I can't remember it now.
Okay. Well, there was a subpoena issued, and he received it.
It's been so long ago, I just can't.
Okay, so I demanded you subpoena Cole, and you subpoenaed him. Is it true that Cole failed to show up in McGrath in response to your subpoena?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
So
he didn't show up.
Okay, yeah. When I asked at the time, did you tell me nothing could be done about Cole failing to show up as subpoenaed?
I don't think I told you nothing could be done, but that it was an issue between the court and Brent Cole, because the subpoena comes from the court.
So it was your opinion that you shouldn't have asked the court to order him to appear. It was the court's responsibility on its own to make him appear.
Sure.
So you're telling me
that the court order is not an attorney order.
Okay. So you could not have asked the court to order him?
I could have, but I don't know whether I was obligated completely to do so.
Okay. So you didn't do so because you thought the court should have done so?
Could have done so.
And why didn't the court?
You'd have to ask Judge Murphy.
Okay. Is it true that you never called Cole to testify at my sentencing because his testimony wasn't relevant to my guilt?
I'm not, as I said earlier, Mr. Hague, I can't remember all the conversations I had with you over a decade ago. Whether his testimony was relevant to your sentencing or not, I'm not sure.
Okay, I'd like to admit a transcription of a 2106 phone call with Robinson, in which he specifically stated that he did not call Cole to testify at my sentencing because his testimony wasn't relevant to my guilt.
Mr. Hague, what's the testimony that you think Mr. Cole would have provided?
That I had given up a year of guiding in reliance on the prosecutor, the state, promising to give me credit for it.
And did that assertion get made at the sentencing hearing?
No, it did not.
And why? I mean, you were there. You were the one who certainly knew what you did or didn't do and what you relied on or not. Why didn't you yourself make that argument or provide that testimony? I mean, there were sources other than Cole.
I was sentenced at almost 2 in the morning after, like, whatever it was, I forget how many hours it was. I was so beat down, wore out, and Mr. Robinson even said after 10 p.m., because he's a diabetic, he has stated that he was barely there by 10 p.m., and I was sentenced at 2 a.m. after when going through, I don't know, it started at what, 10 in the morning, at 2 a.m. the next day, when it's still going on, me as a defendant, I was not there. I maybe was there in body, but I wasn't there in mind.
Well, you were there in mind and fresh at 10 o'clock in the morning. Or, I mean, I understand what you're saying about...
I was not allowed to testify until at very nearly midnight.
Did you testify?
Yes.
But for some reason you chose not to bring up the topic of your reliance?
I was so wore out. I said on the record, I'm so wore out and tired and beat, I don't even know what's going on. That is on the record. I said, I'm so wore out, beat, I don't know what the hell's going on. That is on the record at nearly midnight.
Okay.
The crucial thing is I ordered that man to subpoena Mr. Cole. He did. Mr. Cole did not show up. And I had given Mr. Robinson written questions to ask Mr. Cole about the plea agreement,
okay,
about me giving up your guiding.
Okay. Ask your question.
Okay. So I would like to admit this as proof that Mr. Robinson stated...
You're going to have to lay some sort of foundation for whatever that is.
It is a phone call between me and Mr. Robinson, a transcription of a phone call made on February 1st of 2006. And so, I don't know, should I give it to Mr. Robinson or can I just admit it?
You have to lay a foundation with what it is.
I just said it's a phone call between me and Mr. Robinson in which Mr. Robinson says he never called Cole to testify at my sentencing because his testimony wasn't relevant to my guilt.
And was it?
My next question for Mr. Robinson was going to be, why would you state this when I had already been found guilty and was being sentenced?
Okay, ask him that question.
Mr. Robinson, why did you state that you didn't call Cole to my sentencing because his testimony wasn't relevant to my guilt when I had already been found guilty and was being sentenced?
Well, I mean, if I said that, the point was that if you were going to call Cole to talk about a plea agreement that never existed, what does it have to do with whether or not you took the wolves or didn't take the wolves in the area that was not permitted?
It was about me getting credit for a year that I gave up, that the state promised they would give me credit for, and Cole told me that. And me and my wife almost went bankrupt, and we had two baby daughters, and I never got credit for that year. And Mr. Cole, during his deposition, I think you have this, said, Mr. Robinson should have made that argument at my sentencing that I should get credit for that year. Mr. Cole has stated that in one of the documents, and I'll find it here, but I don't know if I have it right now because I didn't know this was going to come up. Mr. Cole said, Mr. Robinson should have made this argument at my sentencing. Mr. Robinson didn't. I wanted Cole there to have the word from the horse's mouth, so I subpoenaed him. We bought him an airline ticket. We bought him a hotel room. He never showed up, and then I was told nothing could be done about it. I got taken for a ride. So that's the issue there. I'll move on. After Cole received his subpoena, did he call you and tell you he did not intend on being available to testify?
I don't know.
Okay, I would like to admit a letter from Cole to Robinson, 825-05, which states this.
Objection, hearsay.
It's in writing, signed by Brent Cole. It says, as I discussed with you in an earlier telephone conversation, I was not intending to be available. And the first part says, I am receipt of your letter from your office dated August 22nd, 2005.
He's made a hearsay objection, okay?
Okay.
So hearsay means it's somebody's statement made outside of court. So that letter would typically be hearsay, possibly.
Can Robinson verify it?
it's not a matter of whether it's a there's any dispute about it getting written. What do you want me to do with that information?
I want it to prove that Cole affirmatively stated when he got the subpoena that he was affirmatively stating he was not going to obey it.
So he wants to show an out-of-court statement to prove the truth of the matter asserted as hearsay. There's also no foundation. It's also irrelevant.
It's a letter signed by Brent Cole to Chuck Robinson. And the significance of this is Mr. Robinson never gave me this letter or told me that he received it a month before Cole was supposed to testify. And so I was led to believe all along that Cole was...
I will allow the letter to show that Mr. Robinson had knowledge of Mr. Cole's purported unwillingness, reluctance, refusal to appear. It goes to Robinson's state of mind.
Okay, so...
You
There's
can
still no foundation.
I'll mark it as the next exhibitor to admit it.
Okay. Thank you. Is it true you filed in court a written protest that leaders violated evidence rule 410, specifically that he violated evidence rule 410, when he recited my plea negotiation statement to support the charges against me in all three charging informations?
I really can't answer that question, Mr. Hager, because it's been so long. I know that the issue came up as to whether or not
I'd like to
anything
admit,
you said in the plea negotiation can be used against you.
I'd like to admit a document Mr. Robinson submitted to the court.
Mr. Hague, remember what I talked about yesterday? If this is already in the record, if he submitted this, as you claim he did, to the sentencing judge, you're wasting your time, your valuable time, because that's already part of the record.
Okay. Well, is it true that, you know, that in the record you complained about Scott Leaders using my statement in a thing, and you certified on it that you delivered it to him, to Scott Leaders, by courier and fax on the 6th day of May 2005, and you included an affidavit by me saying, you know, David Hague protests you using these statements. And I guess, can I just show Mr. Robinson to see if this refreshes his memory?
You can, but again,
okay.
What help me out so I understand where you're going. Why is this important since it's already, why is it important for you to emphasize this again since it's already part of the sentencing record?
That Scott Leaders was notified that he was using my statement in violation of evidence rule 410, and he never took my statement out of the charging information that I went to trial on. And that means the whole charging information is invalid because rule 410 says no statements that were made during plea negotiations can be used in any civil, administrative, or legal proceeding.
I know what the rule says.
And so Mr. Leaders was on notice, and he didn't do anything about it. And what makes it even worse, far worse, is when I filed a bar complaint against Mr. Leaders, in a certified written response, he stated that he never used my statement in any charging information. And he says if he had, somebody would have protested. So not only do the charging information show that he used my statement, Robinson protested, gave it to him, and in violation of all that, in knowledge of all that happening, Mr. Leaders still wrote a certified document that he never used my statement.
Mr. Leaders is not on trial here. I don't know whether he perjured himself. I don't know whether he should be disbarred. But even if he should, that's not happening as a result of this hearing.
Okay. Well, I just
happening
wanted to...
as a result of this hearing.
Okay.
Is that you're on an evidentiary hearing to see whether or not you can prove ineffective assistance of counsel. And right now, you're telling me that your lawyer did what you wanted him to do, that he filed an objection, which I don't know what Judge Murphy did with it, but if she made a legal error and let that stuff in, the recourse is to appeal that. Was that a point on appeal?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
And they didn't do anything. They didn't even address it.
I can't do anything about that.
Well, see...
The Court of Appeals, I don't know why they rejected that argument.
Yeah.
I have no idea. But
neither do I. And that's why I'm upset, is I don't believe they could. I don't think legally they could have, you know, do it.
I don't have authority to overrule the Court of Appeals.
Okay. Well, can I, Your Honor?
You want to spend all your time relitigating what's
going on? I'm almost done. I have like two more questions for Mr. Robbins.
I'll let you do it, sir, but I'm pointing out to you that you have precious little time and you are beating a dead horse.
Okay, can I admit these into evidence, please?
What are they?
It's Robinson's protest in the record, and then it's Leader's certified bar response in which he says,
Yes.
Okay.
And just for the record, objection, they're duplicative of things already in the record. There's no foundation for those documents. They're relevant to this proceeding, among other things, hearsay.
Those are overruled. Well, I don't know whether they're relevant. I don't think they're relevant, but I want them to be part of the record, even though some of it already is.
Did you ever file a motion to suppress my statement?
I didn't move to suppress. I didn't make a motion to suppress evidence in your case, as I recall.
Why didn't you move to suppress my statement when you protested that Mr. Leaders was using it?
That is a suppression motion. There's a difference between, I think what you were getting at is whether I moved to suppress evidence based on a search. I didn't. However, I did protest them using your statement in the information that were used to charge you.
But it was a motion to suppress.
It doesn't have to be a motion to suppress. I'm just saying the ultimate result would be that if the court agreed with me, they would not have been able to use your statements, and they would have been suppressed for the purpose of the information. Now, you have to also remember, Mr. Haig, that once you testified in court, then those statements come in.
Okay. Did you protest the use of my statement against me at trial?
Yeah.
The map that I had put all the wolf kill locations on, did you protest them using that map against me?
I didn't know there was a reason to protest it.
Okay.
Because at that time,
Because they hadn't given you a copy in discovery.
Right, I didn't know there was another map out there.
Did I ever ask you to include Leader's use of my statement in my points of appeal? So did I ever ask you, hey, Chuck, you think we should?
I think the point of appeal was made then. Error was made on the part of the judge by not granting that motion.
No, it was not, and I'd like that is in the record. That's Robinson's points of appeal. I'd like to just say in the record he never did appeal that. I would also
Mr. Haig, wait. Okay. What is it that you think should have been appealed but was not?
The use of my statement in the charging information.
Okay.
Forcing me to trial. Use of the map, my statement at trial.
The statement you gave to the troopers back in April,
right.
May.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Did I ever ask you to include Leader's use of my statement in my points of appeal?
No.
I'd like to admit an email to Mr. Robinson dated October 17, 2015, in which I say, Chuck, here's some stuff about the appeal. Down at the bottom, it says, also, should we again point out the information uses much of my statement made in plea negotiations? Robinson responds the same day, thanks for your thoughts and research. And I'd like to admit that into evidence.
It's admitted.
And I actually have Robinson's points of appeal. Should I?
If you want to repeat what's already in the record, sure, go ahead.
And that's it for Mr. Robinson, for me.
Okay.
May I approach the witness?
You may.
Mr. Robinson, I have a copy of a Court of Appeals unpublished opinion from 2008. And this is the appeal that went up to the Court of Appeals. It says that the defendant primarily argued that the prosecutor violated Alaska Rules of Evidence 410. Is that right?
there. I highlighted it. Sorry, I can blow it up and make it bigger.
Yeah, I'm not sure I got the right lens for my glasses here, but yeah, I see it now.
Okay. That is what it says. So yes. The Court of Appeals did take up that issue that he just said the Court of Appeals didn't take up?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the testimony yesterday. There was some discussion about a deal, whether one existed or not, and that's been the subject of a lot of discussion here, hasn't it? All right, so I'm going to pull up the deposition. Approach.
All right, this is a copy of the deposition, page 112.
Whose deposition?
Mr. Robinson's deposition.
Yeah, raise it so I can read it better.
It says right here, go ahead and read that and I'll ask you a question about it.
If you get it alone.
Sure, I can do that.
I don't think these lens powers work.
No problem. All right.
Go ahead and read that. Yeah, I see that. My answer? Uh-huh.
All right, so you were asked if there was a deal on the table before you came into the case, or if there was a deal at the time you came into the case, what did you say?
It wasn't very clear to me that there was a deal that was agreed to by all parties.
Okay. And at that time, did you know that there had been the framework of a deal had been worked out, but then Mr. Haig actually introduced a new term to swap the planes that were the plane that was agreed on to be forfeit. Did you know that that had happened?
Repeat that again, Mr.
At the time that you were deposed, did you know that before you came into this case, Mr. Cole and the prosecutor had worked out a deal, and after they worked out that deal, Mr. Haig came back and said, actually, I want a different deal. I want to forfeit a different plane than the one that was used in the offense.
No, I didn't know that.
You didn't know that. Okay. And I think you testified yesterday that you gave Mr. Haig the option. You told him that you could try to work out another deal with the prosecutor, or he could go to trial. And what did he want to do?
Well, it wasn't a matter of working out another deal. What I told Mr. Haig was that if he wanted to enforce the deal that he thought he had, we could pursue that or go to trial.
Okay, and what did he choose to do?
Go to trial.
Okay. All right. And there was also a question put to you yesterday about why you didn't pursue an ineffective assistance of counsel claim against Mr. Cole. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that question.
So, did you know at any time during this litigation that the deal that Mr. Cole had initially worked out before Mr. Haig introduced a new term into the deal was that Mr. Haig would have been back to guiding in the fall of 2005, less than 1 year of a full suspension because he guided in the spring of 2004?
I'm trying to think back, Mr. Peterson, as to whether that issue came up or not. I knew that sometime during my representation with Mr. Haig that he mentioned that he had given up or agreed to give up hunting for a certain period of time. For like a year, I think. But I'm not sure that we ever talked about it other than he said he'd agreed to do it. whether or not the state was obligated to go forward with it. And, I mean, as far as the reliance question is concerned, if there was no deal, I'm not sure what the deal was about.
I'm just asking you now if you knew that there had been an initial framework of a deal whereby he would have been back to guiding in the fall of 2005.
I knew that Mr. Hicks said that he had voluntarily given up for a year. Now, when that would have gone back into effect, is this too far in the past?
Fair enough.
Time. But there was some understanding on his part that he would be back to guiding.
Okay. And how long did you practice criminal defense law in Alaska?
Well, I came to Alaska in 1972 as an intern, a second-year law student from UCLA, working for the Public Defender Agency. I did that for 6 months. I went back, and in my third year before I graduated, I came back to Alaska and worked in the DA's office for another interim period. Then when I graduated from UCLA, I came back and became an assistant district attorney in Anchorage. And I did that until 1976. And then from 1976 until I retired, I had a contract with the Office of Public Advocacy to do criminal work and did quite a few criminal cases like that. I had, in addition to those criminal cases, I also had a couple of three murders, assaults. I did a lot of criminal work.
So you have a lot of experience in criminal practice in Alaska, criminal law practice in Alaska.
Yeah.
Were you familiar with wildlife guide sentencing around the early mid-2000s?
I had done, I can't remember the exact number of wildlife cases I did, but I had done some wildlife cases before I took Mr. Hicks' case.
So,
both federal and state, by the way.
Okay. Would that, in your view, if Mr. Hague would have been back to guiding by the fall of 2005 with just a one-year guide license suspension, would that have been a very favorable deal for him, in your view?
Given what the maximum sentence could be for that, sure, that would have been a good deal.
A lifetime guide license revocation is the maximum sentence for a guide committing a same-day airborne, right?
That's the potential exposure, yeah.
3 years to a lifetime suspension.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So there was some talk about the judge and the trooper. You didn't see Judge Murphy in a truck with the trooper, did you?
Yeah, that question came up yesterday. And the first time somebody asked me that was Mr. Hague in 2011, several years after this case was over.
And what year was the trial?
I think it was 2005, 2006, somewhere in that period. you know, I thought about this last night. I know I heard about it. I know I said I may have seen it, but I could be wrong. And I'm still at that position. I saw the trooper and the judge in many circumstances during that whole time. I just can't clearly say that I saw him chauffeur her around.
And you said the first time that you heard about it was in 2011.
First time somebody asked me whether I saw it.
Okay. Yeah. You're aware that there was more than one trooper in McGrath at the time, I assume.
I didn't know there was more than one trooper other than Gibbons at the time. I didn't see any other. As far as I can recall, I didn't see any other law enforcement person from the state trooper's office at trial or in the courthouse other than Trooper Gibbons. Now, there may have been somebody else I didn't see.
And what about a public safety technician? Do you recall seeing a public safety tech around? Someone else that works for DPS but isn't a uniformed trooper?
No, like I said, the only person that I saw that I thought was a law enforcement official at the time that I was in the courthouse for what was set up to be a courthouse was Trooper Gibbons. Now, that's not to say there was no other person around. I'm just
right.
saying that
no,
that's what I recall.
So if someone would have told you during trial that the judge was spending a significant amount of time alone with the state's witness, is that something that you would have brought up in your practice?
During the trial, I probably would have brought it up if it had been made a big issue, yeah, but maybe I didn't think of it as such a big issue at the time, knowing how rural Alaska works.
And that's important. So how rural Alaska works. Is McGrath the trial is in McGrath, right?
Rural McGrath.
Rural McGrath, okay. Is that a big city?
I think it's just a little more than a village.
Are there taxi cabs in McGrath?
I don't know. I didn't call for one, but I don't know whether the taxis in McGrath or not. I walked pretty much the whole time I was in McGrath.
Okay.
Or a bicycle.
So,
I think there was a bike around.
One of the defendant's friends tells you during trial that he has seen the trooper driving the judge back and forth from court and eating lunch together. Is that something you would bring up during trial? In your practice?
If I'd have heard about the lunch together, maybe, but I don't remember hearing about lunches together. I did hear that they were seen in the same car driving around, but I don't recall being told that they were having lunch together.
And just to clarify, I'm just asking you what your practice would be in this scenario. And
had I been made aware that they were dining together, then I would have protested that. But I don't.
And I'm certainly not suggesting that they were. In any event, it was not brought to your attention, or your testimony now is that you don't recall it being brought to your attention. It was not a significant issue that was brought to your attention.
Not the lunch part. No. I don't recall being told that they were having lunch.
Okay, let's forget about lunch. Driving together. You said that the first time you were asked
about
that was in 2011, which was some 6 years after the trial or some five, 6 years.
No. You misunderstood what I said. As I recall, the first time somebody asked me if I saw it was in 2011.
Right.
By Mr. Hay. As far as hearing about it, I heard about it while we were in McGrath. But I didn't give it a whole lot of significance, understanding how rural things work in McGrath and getting around. So, in fact, it kind of reminded me of a situation that me and Paul Davis and ex-Judge Singleton had back in 1974 when the three of us drove in the middle of winter to cover court calendars in Glen Allen and Valdez. And the three of us rode together for days. And the only thing we really talked about was the flattening of Judge Singleton's tires in McGrath when it was 55 degrees below zero, and overnight the tires were flattened on the bottom. But during the whole time that we rode together, which was several days, we never talked about any cases, we didn't engage in any topics that were related to the court count.
All right.
So, in other words, having that experience, it just didn't occur to me that that alone was a big deal. Now, had I known about the lunch.
Well, again, I was using that as an example to ask you about what your practice would have been in a situation like that.
Let me make sure I've got this summary right. Your recollection is that someone told you during trial that Murphy was in a vehicle with the trooper.
Right.
You never saw that at all during the trial.
I don't.
And that didn't, that whoever told you that, whatever that information was, didn't trigger any sort of concern. Because of your experience previously driving around rural Alaska with the DA, the judge, on a circuit, if you will.
Correct.
And
And there was no suggestion of any interaction between the judge and the trooper beyond this rumor of driving from, to court. That's basically it.
Okay. And do you know if that was during trial or sentencing that you heard this rumor?
Boy, it's been so long ago, Mr. Peterson, I can't remember whether I heard it while it was before or after, or during sentencing. I heard it while we were in McGrath, before everything was over, but I can't tell you whether it was during the trial portion or the sentencing.
Okay.
Excuse me? I have
All
something
right,
that
let's move on
what's
to
happening here. Do I have a chance to, when do I do that, I guess?
To do what?
Mr. Robinson.
No, he doesn't get to do this.
Just let him speak for a second so I can understand what he's trying to do. And then I will rule on his possible objection. Okay? Now, what are you trying to do?
There's the letter that I already submitted,
you
I believe.
You can ask him further questions after he's done with his questioning.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, so I wait.
Wait until he's entirely done, then you'll get another chance to ask questions.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Have you ever raised an objection like that during trial? Say, hey, there was talk that, or at sentencing for that matter, that the judge was talking to a witness. Have you ever raised an objection like that during any trial or sentencing?
Not that I can remember.
Okay. And you have a great deal of experience in this type of practice, as we've already talked about. In your experience, if the judge says, yeah, that didn't happen, what kind of relief would be granted if you did bring it up?
Well, if Judge Murphy said, if I'd have brought it up and Judge Murphy said it didn't happen, then I guess we'd have to have an evidentiary hearing with another judge to determine whether or not it happened.
Well, the judge could do that, or the judge could say it didn't happen.
Yeah, she could say it didn't happen,
and
then I would, be stuck with what to do about a denial of a rumor. But I guess to resolve the question of whether it did or didn't happen, you have to have some third party make that decision, because the judge is just making an assertion that somebody else has decided whether it's true or not.
And so if it would have been brought up to you as something that was significant, you would have gone through that. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So there was some talk about subject matter jurisdiction, the signing, the swearing of the affidavit for a complaint, right?
Right.
And then that was cured when the prosecutor filed an information instead.
Well, in the opinion of the court, the district court was cured. In my opinion, it wasn't cured, because in my opinion, it shouldn't have been amended.
Okay. And that was all made... That was all. That argument was made after Mr. Hager decided to go to trial. Is that right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. And you filed a motion to dismiss. I don't know if that was clear yesterday. You did file a motion to dismiss the charging document based upon that procedural failing.
Yeah.
And the state simply amended the information at that point.
Well, they argued that they didn't even have to sign it. As I recall, Scott Leader argued that it wasn't a requirement that.
Okay.
These allegations be sworn to.
But that wasn't your defense at trial, was it? I mean, you had a defense at trial.
Yeah,
I had
other defenses. I mean, one of them was that I thought that instead of David being charged with illegal guiding, he should have been charged with illegal trapping, because the permit that he got from the state was not a hunting license permit, but a trapping license permit. And I did make a request that the court instruct the jury that he should be held liable, if or guilty at all, under the regime that was set up for the trapping permit.
Okay, so you had actually a relatively technical legal argument about why he should be convicted of a lesser offense,
yeah.
Right?
In addition, the facts showed that David wasn't guiding. He and Mr. Zeller were out trying to take wolves. He wasn't trying to take a wolf for the benefit of giving that wolf to a guiding client. As I recall, they sold the pelts for a few hundred dollars or something. So it wasn't really a guiding operation, in my opinion. I thought he was just out illegally trapping it at most.
All right, so may I approach?
Yes.
Okay, I've got a copy of the 2004-2005 Alaska Fish and Game Laws and Regulations. This is Chapter 54 from Title 8, 720. So go ahead and read it's A8 first, and I'll ask you a question about it.
I have to hold it up pretty closely.
This is AS08.54.720A8.
A8,
2004-2005.
Go ahead.
A statute, right? Not a regulation.
A statute, right.
1 through 8?
No, A8.
Oh, A8. Okay.
All right.
Wait a minute. Okay.
And then also A15, which is right here. Same title and chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So, your argument at trial was that they should convict him instead of a trapping offense, which would have been...
Instead of a hunting offense. My argument at trial is that instead of being convicted of a hunting offense, he should be convicted of a trapping offense because he was an airborne hunting.
Right. And what 54.720 covers guides... activity generally, right?
When they're guiding.
Well, it says it is unlawful for a guide, for a person licensed under this chapter, and this is a chapter that licenses guides, right, to commit a wildlife offense, a violation of a state game statute or regulation. That's what A8 says, right?
Yeah.
And A15 says a person licensed under this chapter to knowingly violate a game statute or regulation prohibiting same-day airborne.
Right. Which is
so,
the state
so your
was,
argument
but,
is...
But the argument in this case, you have to remember, Mr. Peterson, the state's position in this case was that precisely what's laid out in 15, that Mr. Hague was out hunting airborne
right.
a day ahead of time. In other words, as I understood the airborne statute, is that you can search for a game, you just can't shoot them on the same day that you search for them with an airplane. My argument was that Mr. Hague was not going out hunting for
sure.
wolves for the purpose of his guiding business. He wasn't same-day airborne for the purpose of hunting.
Right.
He was same-day airborne for the purpose of trapping.
Understand.
And that
totally
was
understand.
The defense. Now,
and that's a pretty good defense to these charges, isn't it?
I thought so.
That's the best one that you
that's
could come
up
with.
That's the best one I thought
Have
I could
Have you thought
come
of
up
a better
with.
One since then in the last decade?
No. You have to also remember that Mr. Hague was charged with some other offenses, too, that were unrelated
right,
to the wolf.
Right, falsifying the sealing certificate and so forth. But I was just, to talk about your defense at trial, that...
Well, I thought that given the fact that the state's theory of Mr. Hague's guilt was that he was same-day airborne hunting, and that's what they argued. And... my position was, well, it isn't hunting, it's trapping.
Sure, and that was your defense. That,
and the regime,
as you said, that's a pretty good defense.
And the regime that he was given the permit under, which was another statute, authorized the giving of a trapping permit, not a hunting permit.
All right.
And in addition to that, on cross-examination of the state trooper Gibbons, you got him to admit that he was mistaken on direct, didn't you?
I got him to admit that he was mistaken as to the unit in which
the subunit,
the wolves were taken.
Right. He said 19C, but in fact it was 19D, and he said, Yes, I misspoke. So you were alert and aware during cross-examination. You got a state's primary witness to admit that they made a mistake.
Right.
All right. So there's a copy of a map that was talked about yesterday. Is this, Mr. Haig, is this the same map?
Yep.
All right. May I approach?
Mm-hmm.
And can I have this map to show the witness?
Sure.
So this is the same map that Mr. Haig was asking you about yesterday.
Yeah.
It appears to be a map of the McGrath area and has some highlighting and some markings on it. I think you said yesterday there's nothing significant about the map at trial to you.
There was no indication to me at the time that the state put up the exhibit showing where the alleged crime took place that that was false. I mean, in other words, there wasn't anything other than the misstatement of the unit, C and D. There wasn't anything other than that that showed me that that was a fabricated exhibit that we were using at trial.
Okay, and you see here down at the bottom in the middle it says A, B, C, D, E, Z along the kill sites. It's got them listed out here, right?
On that map, but I'm not sure that that's a plaintiff exhibit. In other words, I've never seen a plaintiff exhibit that lists these things underneath.
Okay, well, I'm showing you this, and that's what it says here, right?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's clearly marked 19C, 19D here.
Right.
Now, at trial, do you recall a state's witness? Thank you. Talking about marking a map with the kill sites?
Ms. Peterson, so many witnesses today, I just can't recall.
I'll ask you more specific question. Do you recall Mr. Zellers talking about marking the map where on the map the wolves were killed using letters A, B, C, D, E, and Z?
What I recall about Mr. Zeller's testimony is that he testified at trial that these wolves were not taken in the area where they should have been. That's the upshot of what I recall Mr. Zeller testifying. Specifically,
So if a witness for the state would have said, these letters correspond with the kill sites during trial on a map, and those letters correspond with what is being shown on that map, would that give you cause to believe that the map has somehow been altered or that you should object to the use of that map?
No.
Okay. Maps are publicly available, right?
Yeah.
Anybody can go to the USGS and get a copy of a map. Even in 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8.
I understand.
You can't go to USGS anymore because they closed down, but for that part of it. But you can print them off the internet now. Surely you've been in trial and the prosecutor shows up with a map that's publicly available. The court can take judicial notice of maps, right?
Right. Okay.
And certainly a map of the area is something that you would have had access to in the discovery.
Right.
The permit actually has a copy of the map on it, right?
Yeah.
And you had a copy of that. Well, and Mr. Haig had a copy of that, right?
The permit map was a map showing the general area and then the area that was open for traffic.
Right. And this is a blown-up version of that, right?
I can't remember the blown-up version of
that. Fair enough. Any reason to believe? Well, that's fine. We'll move on. Now, you recall yesterday Mr. Haig said that he believes the map was corruptly altered to show that the wolves were killed in his guide use area. But didn't the trooper say during your cross-examination at that trial that the wolves were not killed in Mr. Haig's guide use area?
Well, after I brought out the fact that he was, you know, he was wrong,
right,
about where the wolves were taken, you know, then he, once he admitted that, he had to say that apparently they were not taken in Mr. Haig's guiding area.
Right. He said, you're right, I misspoke. It was 19D, not 19C, right?
Right.
Not in Mr. Haig's guide use area.
Not Mr. Haig's guiding area, right.
And, in fact, Mr. Haig also took the stand at trial and admitted that he killed the wolves outside the wolf control area as well, right?
Yes, he admitted that he'd taken the wolves outside the area he was permitted to do so.
And his co-defendant, who had pled and
Mr. Zeller,
was testifying for the state, also testified to that, right?
And Mr. Zeller said the same thing that they... As I understand it, David was flying a plane, Mr. Zeller was using a rifle, and Mr. Zeller was the one that shot the wolves while Mr. Haig was flying over. That's the way I understood it happened.
So regardless of what any map shows, the state's witness that was there said they killed, they being the defendant and that witness, killed the wolves outside of the wolf control area, and your own client, the defendant, took the stand and said the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you have any idea where the subunit lines for the guide use area 19, the game management unit 19
no.
area were in 2004?
No. I mean, other than what I looked at and researched for the purpose of the trial, I wasn't aware of those guiding units, the hunting units, or whatever you want to call them, you know, before then. In fact, I had never been to McGrath before then.
And Mr. Haig was a guide,
yes,
right? He killed the wolves illegally, whether it was trapping or hunting or whatever the argument was, right?
The jury found he killed them without permission.
Okay. All right. Nothing further.
Trey, you have additional questions? Okay. I'd like to show Mr. Robinson the transcript, but I think it's maybe already been admitted, if I may. What it says is
show him what you want to show him.
Okay.
You said now you just heard, is it true that you just heard that the chauffeuring took place, but in fact didn't you specifically say, I know, but while we were there, I saw it.
Yeah, I said that, but I also said I saw it during trial, I believe. I could be wrong.
Okay.
I also said that.
Okay, but so after you said that, you said, but while we were there, I saw it.
And what did I say?
Objection. He's trying to mischaracterize
right.
What the witness just said. That is completely inappropriate.
I also said, I believe, but I could
okay.
be wrong. So
can I admit this into evidence?
I thought it was admitted yesterday.
But sorry.
Is this already in?
I don't know for sure.
Would you have an objection to a prior inconsistent statement coming in?
I'd like to see it.
Sure, you may. Show that to him, please.
Okay, yes, I do object because it doesn't have his complete statement. Also, it's a transcribed phone call that made by who knows who, so there's no foundation. It's hearsay. He's got the witness on the stand. He can ask him about it. And it's not a prior inconsistent statement because the witness just said he said it and he also said more. So, therefore, it isn't a prior inconsistent statement.
Well,
it's a transcription.
I understand.
No idea where it came from.
And I'm thinking about what you just said. You're waving your hands and rolling your eyes. Don't help. Okay? You're a grown-up. You're an experienced lawyer. I get it. You're frustrated. act professionally. I'm sure you can. Now, the hearsay objection is overruled. The foundation, Mr. Haig, you have to show some sort of foundation with this. This is just a piece of paper with some words on it. No one has any idea where this came from.
It's a conversation that I had with Mr. Robinson when I believe you said your mom had died. You're in Washington, D.C. And I actually have a thumb drive with the actual audio that we can provide the court and the state. I don't know if I have it right now. I'm a one-man band, and I don't know how to do all this.
You're going to have to put on some sort of testimony about what that is, either your testimony, someone else's testimony,
okay.
Mr. Robinson's testimony, about what this thing is.
Okay.
So you can either ask him.
Okay.
I don't know whether he knows.
In your best recollection, is that a true version of what happened?
Well, let's start with ask him whether or not he had a conversation at some point in time.
Okay. Did you have a conversation with me at some point in time about Judge Murphy and Trooper Gibbons?
At some point in time, yes. That okay. particular time, if you want to know about 2011, is that the time you
yes.
want to know about? I do recall that I was in Washington, D.C. I had been there since October because my mother was dying from cancer. I stayed there to help take care of some personal stuff after she passed away in January. And I remember you calling me within the 10 days, 2 weeks or so after she passed. It could have been sooner, could have been later. So I do recall you talking to me, yeah, on the phone.
Okay.
I didn't know it was recorded, but I do remember you talking to me.
Okay. And I don't know what to do right now.
But I can tell you right now that, as I recall the issue of seeing or not seeing the trooper, I would have said the same thing if that's what I said. I would say it again today. I'm not certain that I saw it. I could be wrong.
But then after that you said, but I know I seen it while I was there.
No, after the trial. In 2011, when you talked to me on the phone, if that's a transcript of what we talked about, what I said is that I saw it, I believe, but I could be wrong. I mean, and I still feel that way. I'm not sure today that I saw it.
Let me see the piece of paper. I don't think this is a prior inconsistent statement. I think this is a consistent statement, which is that he might have seen it during trial, wasn't sure. So I'm not going to admit it. His testimony about what he saw or didn't see and remembered is certainly admissible. But that statement isn't.
Okay. If I have a tape recording of this, is there any way that get it in?
It's not a matter of whether it's recorded or not. So, but give that to the clerk. Have her mark it as an exhibit. It's not admitted, but it's marked.
Okay. And so
it's not part of the record, but if I'm making a legal error in excluding it, we'll know what you wanted to be in the record.
Okay. And Mr. Robinson, you just testified that prosecutor leaders filing a new information with a sworn affidavit did not cure the defect. It was still valid. That's you said.
Here's what my point is. I asked the court to get rid of the charges against you because they were not sworn to, as I understand, the requirement for making criminal accusations that give the court jurisdiction to adjudicate them. Mr. Leaders argued that it didn't need to be sworn. Judge Murphy agreed, but, which I still don't understand, if it didn't need to be sworn, then it didn't need to be amended with an affidavit of oath, but the court allowed Mr. Leaders to do that. Now the court says, well, go ahead and amend it and give us the oath, and that's what he did, and that was considered to cure the defect. Now, my opinion was that it didn't cure the defect because it should have been sworn to in the beginning. But that's just my legal opinion. But the court did cure it for the purpose of adjudicating the charges against you at court.
Okay, I'd just like to put on the record that Robinson's deposition, page 10 and 11, state asked if when Mr. Robinson or Mr. Leaders amended the information, if that cured the defect, and Mr. Robinson answered yes.
And it did for the purpose of your trial, because had it not cured the defect, you wouldn't have been able to proceed for adjudication. So for purposes of your trial, the court allowed the state to cure the defect by amending the complaint under oath.
Okay, well, that's all I have for Mr. Robinson.
No other questions of him?
No other questions.
Any recross?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Robinson, your excuse.
Thank you.
Have a safe journey back to the peninsula.
Can I go grab the next witness?
My Warriors won last night, even though I missed the game.
Don't rub it in. Your witness's name, please.
Tony Zellers.
Zellers, you take the stand.
Sir, if you'd remain standing and raise your right hand. You solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you'll give now before this court is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Thank you. You may be seated. For the record, please state your name, spelling both first and last name.
Tony Zellers, T-O-N-Y-Z-E-L-L-E-R-S.
Thank you.
May I proceed?
Were you a trial witness for the state against me?
Yes.
On or about June 23, 2004, did you, Prosecutor Scott Leaders and Trooper Brett Gibbons, have a meeting?
Yes, we did.
I'm sorry, what was the date again?
On or about June 23, 2004.
Meeting between the Leaders, Gibbons, and Mr. Zellers?
Correct.
Okay.
Along with my attorney, and I think Trooper Dewar was there too.
Did Leaders and Gibbons tape record this meeting?
Yes.
Is this? Can I approach and have them look at this, see if it's accurate transcript of the meeting?
Yeah.
Does this look like an accurate transcription of that meeting?
This looks like the meeting.
Okay. During this meeting, did Leaders and Gibbons show you an aeronautical map?
Yes, they did.
Can I approach and see if you agree that this is a copy of what you were shown?
Sure.
This is a copy. The only thing that's slightly different is the green line on it. So.
Okay.
So that's Exhibit 25?
Yes, Trial Exhibit 25. No. Did Leaders and Gibbons...
Hang on just a second. That thing has, for example, indications of where wolves were killed.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So when they showed you this map, did the map, was it exactly the way it is there with the wolf kills on there?
Yes, it was.
Okay. But the only thing that was not on there, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the colored highlight of kind of a boundary unit, that was not there.
The boundary unit was drawn on there, but it wasn't highlighted.
The highlight wasn't there.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead.
Did Prosecutor Leaders and Trooper Gibbons tell you that I had marked the wolf kill locations on this map when they interviewed me during my plea negotiations with them?
Yes, they did.
Did you prove to Prosecutor Leaders and Trooper Gibbons that that map had false hand-drawn game management unit boundaries on it.
Yes, I did.
Did you use the Alaska Department of Fish and Game game management unit physical description to do this?
I'm pretty sure I did use the written description of the game management units.
Okay. Is this description published in all Alaska hunting regulations?
Yes, it is.
Can you
let me just ask a question to make sure I understand what you just said. You were shown this map, and the map had pre-existing unit boundary lines marked on it, right?
Yes.
Okay, and you looked at those lines and said that they were in error?
I looked at the lines and said they were in error. There was a discussion between Trooper Gibbons and myself about he wanted to say the wolf kills were in 19C. I said, no, they were in 19D. And I quoted the boundary line and how this was wrong to him.
So you told him at the time that the boundary lines shown in the map were inaccurately drawn?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
Can you point out to the court or me what boundary was falsified and where the correct boundary should have been?
Using the map here, 19C area doesn't have what I'll just call is this toe area that encompasses and circles these wolf's kills down here. So 19C's western boundary is where the Babel flows into the Swift, and then everything downstream on the Swift is actually 19D, and upstream is 19C. All the wolf's kills were downstream of that point.
Okay. Do the false boundaries...
Downstream of Swift is 19D, isn't David?
19D is downstream of where the Babel River flows into the Swift River.
And the North Fork.
And the North Fork, yes, of the Swift.
Go ahead.
Did the false boundaries on that map corruptly make it seem as if the wolves were killed in my game management unit 19C guide area instead of being killed in game management unit 19D?
Yes.
As far as you know, was I ever allowed to guide in 19D?
No. As far as I know, you were never allowed.
Okay. Did Prosecutor Leaders, Trooper Gibbons, and you discuss how I was not allowed to guide in 19D but was allowed to guide in 19C?
Yes, we had that discussion.
Okay. Did Prosecutor Leaders, Trooper Gibbons, and you discuss how my killing wolves in 19D would not benefit my guide business?
Yes, we had I had the discussion with the trooper that because these were killed outside your guide unit, they were not directly related to your guide.
Did Prosecutor Leaders, Trooper Gibbons, and you discuss how my killing wolves in 19C would benefit my guide business?
Yes.
Was the wolf control program actually taking place in 19C or 19D?
As I recall, there was nothing in 19C, but there were parts of 19D that had.
Okay. During this meeting, did you point out to Prosecutor Leaders and Trooper Gibbons that their search warrant affidavits also falsified the wolf kill locations to my 19C guide area?
Yes, the affidavits listed the wolf kills in 19C, and I pointed out to him that that was incorrect information.
And you may not know this, but did Prosecutor Leaders and Trooper Gibbons tell my jury that I killed the wolves in 19C area to benefit my guide business?
I can't testify to what or the reason why they testified that, but Trooper Gibbons did testify under direct from Prosecutor Leaders that the wolves were killed in 19C. He later had to recant that under cross-examination and say they were killed in 19D.
But do you ever remember reading any transcriptions, have an idea that that Scott Leaders, the prosecutor, said that I was killing wolves in my guide area to benefit my guide business?
Yes.
Okay, basically, that was the state's case against me to my jury, is that I was killing wolves in my guide area to benefit my guide business.
Yes.
Did Prosecutor Leaders and Trooper Gibbons use the map upon which I placed the wolf kill locations during plea negotiations against me at trial?
Yes.
Did Prosecutor Leaders and Trooper Gibbons know the map had been falsified to support their case against me when they presented it to my jury as the reason to convict me?
Yes.
Did Prosecutor Leaders and Trooper Gibbons know the wolves were killed in 19D when they testified to my jury the wolves were killed in 19C?
Yes, as I stated, the trooper had to recant under cross.
And because of your meeting with him, he knew before he ever testified the first testimony that what he was saying was perjury.
Yes.
I'd like you to read an affidavit that you had made out on July 21st of 2010, if I may. Can I approach and have you read this into the record?
The affidavit.
Yeah, I'm going to object. He can't just read his own affidavit into the record. If the petitioner wants to ask the witness questions about what's in it, he can do that. And if it's relevant, then
okay.
Some of it might come in. But
ask him questions. It doesn't matter whether he wrote it in the affidavit. Just ask the basic question you want him to testify
about. Okay.
Were you a state witness during my trial in McGrath?
Yes.
Did you also attend my sentencing, McGrath, on 9/29/05 and 9/30/05?
Yes.
On these days, were you present at both trial and sentencing? Were you present in court every hour that court was in session?
After I was called as a witness, I was present in court. Prior to being called as a witness, I was held at the trooper office until going up, Your Honor.
Okay. On 7/28/05 and 9/29/05, did you personally observe Judge Margaret Murphy being shuttled in a white trooper pickup truck driven by Brett Gibbons?
Yes.
Did you observe Judge Margaret Murphy leaving and returning with Trooper Gibbons in the same truck during breaks, lunch, and dinner, and finally leave with Trooper Gibbons when court was finished for the day?
Yes.
Did most of them happen before I was sentenced?
Yes.
And just to be clear, a lot of them that you've seen was during trial, correct? Because you were a state witness and you were at the... was Trooper Gibbons the primary witness against me at trial?
Yes.
At any point ever during both trial and sentencing, did you ever see Judge Murphy arrive or depart the courthouse alone or with anyone other than Trooper Gibbons?
No.
Has anyone other than myself ever contacted you about whether or not Trooper Gibbons gave Judge Murphy rides during my trial?
No.
Okay, and I think this is part of the record, but can I admit this into the record again or just call it good?
His testimony is what's admitted.
Do you know if Chuck Robinson was aware of the rides Trooper Gibbons was giving Judge Murphy during my trial?
I was with Chuck when we would see him go in and out of the courtroom, so.
So you would assume that he seen what you seen?
I would assume so, yeah. I can't testify to what he sees or remembers, but we were standing outside Chuck Robinson, smoked cigarettes, so during all the breaks and lunch breaks, we would always go outside and gather. So, and then
right outside the courthouse door or the Iditarod building door. So.
Okay, and just for the record, is McGrath like a metropolis with lots of roads, or is there basically one little road between where we're staying and where the courthouse is?
It's a bush village, so there's only one couple little roads so around there.
And so it's very easy to see who's coming and going. Is that true?
Correct.
Okay. That's all I have for Mr. Zellers.
Good morning, Mr. Zellers.
Morning.
So what map did you mark?
I did not mark map. I put maybe one mark on here because there was one wolf kill location on the Stony River. I was unsure of where Dave had marked it.
So you marked that map.
I didn't. Like I said, the wolf kills were already marked on here when the map was presented to me. So.
I'm sorry. Did you... 25, the ones in front of you, did you put anything on that map?
I'm not sure if I actually put a mark on that map, Your Honor. What I was doing is talking to Trooper Gibbons, and I'm not sure if Trooper Gibbons marked or not. I would, you know, I'm not even sure if that one's on
this. The prosecutor asked you a question at trial and said, so let me have you mark the female, because the female, where you're marking, and I'll have you put one, actually, I'm sorry, an A. And you said, yeah, it's got to be right in this area roughly. And he said, and you've marked that as an A, and you said correct. Do you remember that? Here, I'll show you the transcript.
Sure. I appreciate it. You're talking at the trial?
At the trial.
Oh, at the trial. I think I pointed. I didn't mark.
Starts right here. Down to here.
Okay. Yeah, that's not my handwriting, but... Okay.
So at trial, you testified that you marked it an A, right? He said you marked that as an A, and you said correct.
Yes, according to the transcript. Yes.
Right here on the map that Mr. Hague's been talking about, plaintiff's 25 at trial. There's an A marked right there, right?
Yes.
That's the same handwriting as B, C, D, E, and Z, right?
Correct, but it is not my handwriting.
Okay. And you testified at trial that you marked that map, right?
I testified at trial. What I believe I was testifying to was that the A marks that location that we were...
Okay, the question was, let me have you mark the female, where you killed the female, with an A. You said, yeah, it's got to be right in this area roughly. And Mr. Leader said, and you've marked that as an A, and you said?
Yes.
Correct. Okay. That was a trial when your memory was fresh, right? Over a decade ago.
Yes.
Okay. With respect to C, do you recall being asked if you marked C on that map?
I'm sure you have the transcript.
I can approach. May I approach?
You may continue to.
Okay, go ahead and read the top three lines.
Yep.
Okay. So the question was, you marked that with a C. And your answer?
Yes.
Okay. Come on up here. Right in this region here, mark them with the A and B.
So it says we've marked.
Yeah, the prosecutor said that to you, and your answer was?
I said, yes, we've.
So you marked that with a C, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, that was C.
Yeah. The next one B down was, says we've.
Okay, and you're? You and?
The state.
The prosecutor.
I'm sorry, what was the one that you two jointly marked?
I believe he was talking about D.
D as in boy?
This is all in the trial transcript.
I'm sorry?
Delta.
Delta, I'm sorry.
Okay, so we've covered that. Put Let's see. I actually have another question for you. Do you recall testifying about the game management area expanding?
I don't recall talking about a game management unit expanding. I think we're talking about the Wolf Control Zone expanding.
Oh, the Wolf Control Management Area.
Yes.
Right. The management area.
Yes.
And how did it expand it?
Well, initially, the map that was initially shown to me had the north boundary of the Wolf Control Zone just as a straight line, and it expanded to include the contours of that mountain range way up north, which was at the northern boundary. So when I was asked if this is the Wolf Control area that we went out to do during that time, it's like, no, it expanded to include that area up there. So.
Okay, and did that map, Plaintiff's 25 at trial, reflect that change?
If I recall, that was brought up to the judge that this map was not an accurate reflection of that by the state, if I recall correctly. And they clarified that the northern boundary was not accurate on this map.
Okay, so the discrepancy in the map was actually addressed on the record?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so.
All right. And it also doesn't matter whether the wolves were killed in subunit D, 19D, or 19C for the crimes that Mr. Haig was charged with. You're aware of that, right?
I'm not an expert on the law on those statutes. Okay. I mean, so
they were killed outside the Wolf Control Management Area, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, describe for us the predator control program, what it was at that time.
It's to control and work to get the moose population back up. So certain pilots were allowed to shoot wolves from air within the control area that was defined.
Okay. Are you familiar with where wolves might be found generally?
Wolves can generally be found pretty much everywhere, yeah. So in general.
Do they stay in one place for their entire life?
No. They have a territory.
Do you know about how far they might range?
I think that depends where you are. So, I mean, you know, we have the Muldoon pack here in Anchorage that goes from Fort Rich to all the way over to O'Malley. So.
All right. So, you testified at trial, I believe, that you knew it was illegal, you and Mr. Haig knew it was illegal to kill wolves outside of that management area, right?
Yes.
And you made a deal with the state to testify against Mr. Haig at trial, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you did show up at court at trial and testified about where all the wolves were killed, didn't you?
I testified for the state, yes.
And during that testimony that you agreed that, in fact, the very first wolf that you killed under this wolf control permit, the predator management area, or was outside of the predator management area, is that right?
Yes.
And the second wolf was also outside of the predator management area.
Yes, I believe so.
In fact, you said it was, quote, clearly outside of the boundary, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And you also testified that by the time you had killed three wolves, you and Mr. Haig, from the air, not a single one of those three wolves were taken inside the management area, right?
As I recall, yes.
So what did you have to do after killing the wolves under this program?
You had to take the wolves to McGrath to have them sealed and tagged, basically.
And was that done in this case?
I believe some of the wolves were taken. I can't recall, since this was 15 years ago, if all of them were taken. I believe so, but I think they were logged in and tagged.
And you're required to give the location of where the wolves were killed, right?
Yes.
And who did the sealing? Or, I'm sorry, who filled out the sealing certificate?
I think that was the biologist.
Who filled out the paperwork, provided the information to the biologist?
I can't recall who actually wrote it. I think the paperwork was filled out in McGrath when we're in front of the biologist. I didn't necessarily fill out all the paperwork. So.
Okay. Did you discuss with Mr. Haig falsifying the reports, the coordinates, to make it appear as though the wolves were killed within the boundary?
I'm sure we did.
Well, did you?
As best I recall, I'm sure we did, yes.
Just a moment. Mayor Broach?
You may.
This is just another excerpt from your trial transcript, from his trial's transcript, I should say. Can I read that?
Yes.
So, did you discuss with Mr. Haig falsifying the information to make it appear as though the wolves were taken legally?
After refreshing, yes, we did.
Okay. And you testified to that at trial?
Yes, I did.
Do you recall if you flew inside the boundary of the wolf control area to take a GPS coordinate, or if you just made it up? And by you, I mean you and Mr. Haig.
I don't necessarily recall. I mean, we could have probably marked a coordinate inside as we flew up to McGrath to say they were in this area.
And there were 6 wolves total that were taken outside the area, is that right?
As far as I recall, yes.
And, well, you testified at trial to 6 being
taken. As far as I can recall, yes.
Okay. And you testified, as we just covered, that Mr. Haig falsified the sealing certificates?
Yes.
And you were present for all these wolf kills, right?
Yes.
All right. So Mr. Haig asked you if Trooper Gibbons was the star witness. Sounds like you were the star witness at trial, weren't you?
You're going to have to ask Prosecutor Leaders who his star witness was
well,
at
you
the
were
trial.
Present
but I was definitely...
You were integral to the state's case, right?
I believe so.
I mean, you were there when the crimes were committed. You were involved with them, right?
Yes.
And you cut a deal to testify against Mr. Haig?
Yes.
Okay. All right, nothing further.
Can I approach with some stuff?
Mr. Zellers, this is part of the transcription of the meeting you have, and can you read into the record this part here?
objection.
Wait, no, wait.
What is it?
What are you trying to do? You can just ask them the straight question.
During your meeting with Scott Leaders and Trooper Gibbons, did the states say this is where the Stony River wolf killed, this is where the Big Batch of Five killed? And is it true that you asked them, did Dave tell you that's where he was killed? And is it true that the state told you Dave put that mark there? Yes.
Yes, it is true, and it's on page 53 of the transcript.
Okay. And now I want you to go over, this is the official transcript of my trial. I'd like you to look at it, Mr. Zellers. Is it true that Mr. Leaders states at my trial that this is a map? Trooper Gibbons has said you are the one that did this. And Trooper Gibbons says, is it true that said that?
Yeah, Trooper Gibbons acknowledged that he was the one who did that.
Did okay. What? Did what?
I don't know how to do this. Is it true that they were talking about a map, and they say, and then it was used in an interview, one with Mr. Haig, which is not admissible because it was based on plea negotiations, and also with Mr. Zellers regarding where the wolves are taken. And so based on this, along with this, is it beyond any doubt that I'm the one that put those kill locations on the map?
What is he reading from?
No,
he has no idea.
The transcript of trial. It's the first days of trial. It's page...
What are you trying to get him to do?
I'm trying to get...
Just slow down for a second. Are you trying to figure out who put the wolf kill on the map?
Yes.
Ask him that simple question.
Who put the wolf kill on the map according to these documents?
Not according to anything. According to him. Does he know? Ask him. Do you know who put the wolf kill markings on the map?
Do you know who put the wolf kill locations on the map?
Trooper Givens told me you put the wolf kills on the map. Locations.
Okay. And that was during your meeting with Trooper Gibbons. And I guess, can you look at this and tell me...
What's the point you're trying to make so I understand the context?
The point I'm trying to make show is that this map, there's recordings of the state troopers and prosecutor recorded having me put the wolf kill locations on this map that was then used against me at trial.
Okay.
And we need to back up. I need to object to it. I couldn't tell what the purpose of that was, but if the purpose of saying that Gibbons told him that something else happened to prove that that happened, I'm objecting. That's hearsay.
I don't know what you're getting at.
What I'm getting at is during the meeting...
You want to show that you put the wolf pills on the map during your interview with the troopers in April or May?
Correct.
Is there any dispute about that? Just so I'm clear, I don't know what we're...
On that map specifically, the one that was used at trial?
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Zellers just testified under oath that he testified at trial a long time ago when it was fresh in his memory that he put those there.
He just said that... didn't you just tell us that Gibbons told you that the map, the locations of Wilford were put there by...
And I objected to hearsay.
Right.
Yes.
And did you put those little squares on there or not?
No, I did not put any little squares on there.
So that's what he's talking about, the little squares.
The letters identify...
I don't care about the letters.
That's what identifies the location.
Well, no, there are letters, which he put on, right? You put the letters on the map during trial, correct?
Yes.
And the little rectangles...
The little squares I put on the map.
...were on the map previously, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And is there any dispute that the rectangles came from Mr. Haig?
As to that exhibit specifically, I'm not a witness.
But I'm trying to figure out whether we have a dispute here. Do you dispute that? He claims, Haig says, I put the little squares on the map.
Then he can take the stand and testify to that, Judge. I can't answer that question. I'm not a witness. If he wants to try to prove that, he can take the stand and say that. Or point somewhere in the record where that's the case.
And that's what I'm trying to do. The record says...
Mr. Haig.
Okay.
This is now your testimony time. Ready? Did you put the rectangles on Trial Exhibit 25 during your interview with the troopers in April or May of 04?
I did.
And there were six of the little triangles?
Yep.
Correct. Okay. That's good. Now you've that's all in the record. Move on to a different topic.
And I'm sorry, I'm not a lawyer.
I understand that. It's very clear to me. Move on to your next topic.
And I think, let me just look here real quick.
Your Honor, do you need this?
I don't know if you may use it again.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, thank you. I think I'm done with Mr. Zeller's.
Okay. Mr. Zeller, you may... Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have any other further questions?
No, Your Honor.
You may step down.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And can I go out and call the next witness?
Sure. Come forward up to the witness stand, please.
Sir, if you'd remain standing and raise your right hand. You solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you'll give now before this court will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Thank you. You may be seated. And for the record, please state your name, spelling both first and last name.
My name is Dale Dalifka, D-A-L-E. Dalifka is D-O-L-I-F-K-A.
Thank you.
May I proceed?
Hey. I'd just like to say thank you for coming, Mr. Dalifka. After what happened in my case with Brent Cole and Chuck Robinson, did you start reading documents in my case and became so confused and concerned that you contacted Judge Hansen?
That's true.
And what did you and Mr. Hansen talk about?
Well, your case, I was very puzzled, and I had total faith in him. He'd been my mentor as a Superior Court judge. He was appalled, he was disgusted, and he was confused, which left me...
No, wait.
Objection.
Slow down.
What's going on,
buddy?
Okay. I'm going to object to relevance. We'll start there.
What are we doing here? Explain to me what you want Mr. Dalifka to say, that he read some stuff, he wasn't happy, he talked to Judge Hansen.
Yes, you had
Hansen's
said...
Judge statements to him are not admissible.
Okay. Is it true that Alaska's attorneys have banded together against me?
Objection, relevance.
You're going to have to do a little more than that. You just simply ask him some opinion.
Okay, well...
What you've got to show a basis for opinion. You've got to show...
Okay, I'm sorry. Are you an attorney licensed in this state?
Yes.
Have you... been involved with this case or familiar with this case?
Yes.
How so?
Well, Mr. Haig was my client. He had a corporation with an airplane in it. So you want me to say more, or that's...
Well, I don't. That's not much. He.
Well,
that's little to do with the. My assumption is that you know something about the prosecution. And I want to know: were you part of the prosecution? Were you attend a trial? Did you read the transcripts? You tell me what. What you seem to know about this? I've read
probably everything about the case. It starts out, I did a corporation for him. He put his airplane in it. Through the course of this case, they took his airplane.
Okay.
Which appeared to me without due process.
And
You want this man to testify what? About his opinion about due process?
About the conduct of my attorneys in representing me.
Well,
and Your Honor...
Listen to me. I'm trying to help you so you don't wander off into the wilderness. I have a vague sense that you're trying to have this gentleman use his legal knowledge to opine about the quality of your representation.
Somewhat.
Is that what we're getting?
Yeah. And I would like to point out that Your Honor, in one ruling, said that to prove what you're trying to prove, you generally need the testimony of someone that's in the legal field or expert or whatnot.
Okay, so now I'm understanding where you're coming from.
Okay.
So you want him to say, I have evaluated Mr. Cole or Mr. Robinson or both?
Both.
Okay. And you've evaluated their performance in some fashion, and you're going to give me an opinion about whether they rendered effective assistance? Is that what you
Correct.
Want him to do?
No. Yep.
Then you're going to have to lay a foundation of what Mr. Dlyfka reviewed concerning the lawyer's conduct.
Okay.
So I assume, correct me if I'm wrong, sir, you read the trial transcript?
Yes.
Have you spoken to Mr. Cole?
I did early on when... Okay. Dave got charged. We all encouraged him to get good representation. Brent Cole was known as the...
My question to you is, you apparently have made an after the conclusion of Mr. Cole's representation, have done an investigation of some sort, and have come to a conclusion about the quality of that representation. Am I correct so far?
Yes.
Did you make your opinion about the quality of the representation during his representation or only after it was concluded?
Both.
Okay. And what is the basis of your knowledge of what Mr. Cole did or did not do?
Well, what puzzled me was the plea agreement, which I thought that he had been charged with something. I thought there was a plea agreement. And then all of a sudden, the plea agreement doesn't seem to be there. The wheels come off. So then...
How did you gather any information about a supposed plea agreement? Where did that come from?
Mr. Haig.
And when did Mr. Haig tell you about this?
I'm following this case from the time he got charged through. He would call me. I would visit with him, not as his attorney, probably more as his friend. And so
during the course of Mr. Cole's representation, you're talking to Mr. Haig about his interactions with Cole.
He would call me. I wasn't charging him. I was just listening to his concerns and what he would say.
Okay. So prior to Mr. Cole ending the representation, did you speak with Mr. Cole about Mr. Haig's assertion regarding a possible plea agreement?
I don't recall that.
Did you gather any information about the supposed plea agreement from anyone other than Mr. Haig?
At some point, I called Mr. Robinson and said...
You didn't talk to Cole about the plea agreement. Is that correct?
I don't recall that I talked to him about it.
And you didn't talk to Mr. Leaders, did you?
No.
So the only source of information about whether there is a plea agreement or the status of the negotiations or any is entirely from Mr. Haig?
That's probably true.
Okay. So, what is it? What is your opinion about the effectiveness of Mr. Cole's representation? Well, let me back up. Is your the opinion you're about to give me, is that just basically concerning the quality of the plea negotiations and the quality of the deal? And is that what your opinion's about?
My opinion of quality of his representation, because I'm not a criminal attorney, was when Mr. Robinson reviewed the conduct of Mr. Cole and told me he was the one that really led me to believe that the plea agreement something was amiss with that. And that was largely from Mr. Robinson.
Did you make your own independent judgment about the quality of Cole's representation?
Well, only via what Mr. Robinson said, and he, because I said I'm not a criminal attorney, so Mr. Robinson and I, we basically practice law together in the same firm. We're both in Soldotna. I have the utmost respect for him, and so when he tells me there's something wrong, and he's a very, very good criminal attorney, then in light of that, I formed a belief that something was amiss with that.
But your opinion is simply based on two things. One, Mr. Hay told you some body of information about the supposed plea negotiations and deal, agreement. And secondly, you're hearing Mr. Robinson talk about what he thought about all of that.
Yes.
Okay. Are you also here to give us an opinion about the quality of Mr. Robinson's representation?
Well, I guess I'm not allowed to talk about it, but I then, after that, became more and more confused, and that's when I then, if I'm allowed to say it, went to Judge Hanson.
I'm trying to find out what you're here for. Are you here to give
it? I don't know why I'm here.
Do you have an opinion about the quality of Mr. Robinson's representation?
Yes, I have an opinion.
And
just so I'm clear, this is a lay opinion, right?
He assumed.
Because he just said he's not an expert in criminal law, so it can't be an expert opinion based upon the perceived failings of what a criminal defense attorney.
Not necessarily true, but I assume. Let's just find out. What is your opinion? You think that, well, let me back up. Do you think Mr. Cole gave ineffective assistance of counsel?
Based on what I've seen and what I'm allowed, I'm not a criminal attorney, I would say yes, it was ineffective counsel.
And what? And in what manner? How? Why was he ineffective?
Well, and if I'm correct in what I understood happened, there was a plea agreement of which Mr. Haig agreed to plead. Then my understanding was then that the DA expanded on it and charged him beyond the scope of that plea agreement. It's something to that effect. Which I then visited with Mr. Robinson, and Mr. Robinson said, that's not right. I mean, there's something inherently wrong with that. So even as a layperson without a law degree, I could see that. I then went to Judge Hanson. Again, I'm confused. He's mentored me all these years. I'm trying to get unconfused. And he validated that something seemed amiss. I didn't need a law degree to see that something was amiss. So I'm not here as an expert witness. I'm not a criminal attorney, but something seemed wrong.
Okay. Do you have an opinion about whether Mr. Robinson gave ineffective assistance of counsel to Mr. Haig?
Well, what Mr. Robinson said he was going to do and what Robinson ended up doing did not match. He told me that he believed that...
Let me add... Objection. My question was... Do you have an opinion about the effectiveness of Mr. Robinson's representation, yes or no?
Yes.
What is that opinion?
It was ineffective.
How so?
Based on what he told me, his view of the settlement agreement, or the agreement, and how it played out, it didn't match up.
How was he ineffective?
Well... Maybe he wasn't ineffective. Maybe what he thought was going to happen and what did happen don't match. But what he told me he was going to do and what happened
What did he
match.
Tell you he was going to do?
Well, I was under the impression he was going to go back, erase all that had went on, and get Haig another trial or something to that effect. He was going to make right what appeared wrong.
And because he failed that? He did not achieve that result. You think he was ineffective?
Maybe he wasn't ineffective. It just wasn't what he told me originally was going to happen.
You just told me you thought he was ineffective. So how is he ineffective?
Well, I go back, when I look at what happened with the plea agreement, and just forget being a lawyer, just common sense. If I'm going to plead to something... to me as a layperson, it just seemed like they changed the rules. So if they didn't, then he wasn't ineffective. If that's how it is, and the law
said... You don't know what happened other than what Mr. Haig told you?
I know what happened based on what Mr. Haig told me and what Mr. Robinson told me.
Do you have additional questions of Mr. Talifka?
You also stated that you read the court transcripts, correct?
Yeah, I read a lot of things for this case.
Okay. And then, so it isn't true that you just had information from Mr. Cole and Mr. Robinson. You also had information on charges being changed and whatnot that are in the court record, correct?
Correct.
And is it true that one of my concerns, and I believe your concern, is how it could be that I could go in and give a statement to law enforcement on my belief that I would be charged with minor crimes, and that being taken away from me and being charged with greater crimes, and using my statement that I made for the smaller crimes to be used as justification for the larger crimes? Is that one of the concerns that you had?
Go ahead. You can answer that.
Well, there's that. You got to remember, I sat in a courtroom just like this one other time with the judge, went through the same process, and certainly appeared to me that that judge thought you'd been ineffectively represented, so I guess I added that to it. Went with you to the FBI. I mean, again, I'm just speaking as a layperson. I don't have to be a lawyer to read these things and believe that something was inherently wrong. So?
Yeah. And it was, what was wrong?
What do you as a layperson think was wrong?
As simple as I can put it, if I'm charged with something, and so maybe I've misunderstood everything from the beginning. I thought he was charged with a lesser crime. I thought his attorney turned him over to the DA. The DA expands on whatever it was, and he gets charged with the greater crimes. If I'm wrong about that, then I had it wrong. As a layperson, I misunderstood the facts. When I came to court, I don't know how many years ago it was, setting just like this with another judge probing exactly as we are right now, she appeared to, and she certainly added to my concerns about, it was as simple as that. If I'm charged with this.
Was this in front of Judge Joe Needy?
Yes.
Okay.
And just, I'd like.
Hey, help me on this. What? Why was anybody in front of Joe Needy? I mean, I know that happened. I just don't remember.
In my case, I had concerns of Judge Murphy running around with Trooper Gibbons, and that Judge Murphy went into the court record and removed out my evidence. On appeal, when I got to post-conviction relief, Judge Murphy was assigned to conduct my post-conviction relief. And I about had a heart attack because I'm like, how can the very person I'm claiming...
How did Joe Needy get involved?
When Judge Murphy denied my request to disqualify her for cause, she ruled on her own... She says, nope, I can be fair. There's an Alaska statute
that says she
reviewed the recusal. And during that proceeding, many things kind of came to light.
But that's what Judge Joanini...
Correct.
She held some sort of a hearing dealing with Murphy's denial of the recusal on the post-conviction release.
And that's where all the...
All I need to know.
Okay. And Mr. Delifka testified...
One other question. Did you appeal the Murphy recusal?
Judge Joanides got rid of Judge Murphy and said on the record that, quote, at a minimum, there was the appearance of impropriety
by Judge Murphy
at my trial.
Got it. So then Bauman, who took over?
Bauman.
Okay, that's what I wanted. Okay.
And so what we're getting at is there's...
Ask your question of him. You want him here for some reason.
Okay. Is it true Alaska's attorneys have banded together against me?
I don't know the answer to that.
Would you have said this?
I might have.
Okay, so it's possible that you would have said that.
Well, I guess the only way I know to answer your question is I listened to you for hours and hours and hours because I was worried about you. I find out in the court hearing with Gianitas that you have been taping me this whole time, and you chose to cherry pick what you wanted and left the rest. So my wife and I felt very betrayed by you because we were trying to befriend you. I was worried about your mental health. I would be asleep late at night. I would get a phone call. My wife would get me up, and I would listen to you. I probably said a lot of things to you, Dave, out of just trying to be a good friend. So now I've sat here. Again, this case will never end. I'm just here as a layperson, more as your friend. I got it. I'm not a criminal lawyer. I've said that many times, but I don't have to be a criminal lawyer to know that something inherently was wrong with this case. And in front of Judge Joannidis, I sat right here, and she told me that. She said, at the very least, there is something amiss. So I have all these things add up. I'm not talking about as a lawyer. I'm talking about as a person, just a layperson, a farm boy that raises cows and deal. And so here I am again. It just adds more and more to the confusion. But I said a lot of things to you. I was half asleep some of the times, and you're taping me. So I feel very estranged from you, but I also doesn't take away from the fact that I still believe you got a raw deal. It doesn't change any of that.
Yeah. And is it your opinion? Is it your opinion that it may be why I'm so upset and frustrated is that it's now 15 years and we're still dealing with the same things that were identified very early on. And
I'll object. Well, his opinion of whether Mr. Chairman is irrelevant.
Ask a different question.
Okay. I'm going to ask you this question. In your opinion, looking at the seizure of my airplane, did I get due process with seizure of my airplane?
As a layperson, no.
Okay.
What does that mean? What
the warrants, is it?
Well, okay, no, you did not get due process.
What do you mean by that? What was the violation of due process?
As I understood it, they basically just one day went and got his airplane. Maybe I misunderstood.
All you know is they got his airplane and therefore he's...
Well, I read stuff that would lead me to believe that. I don't...
Did you read things?
Help me out here. You've made this assertion. I think he had due process. He didn't get due process. Why not?
My memory is there wasn't a hearing. There wasn't anything. His airplane was in a corporation. Unless I missed something. My view was...
What do you understand happened that you think was improper?
They just went and got his airplane.
They just went and got his airplane. Yeah. And that's all you know. And as far as you know, that was improper. That's the basis of your opinion?
Well, there was... Yeah, let's just leave it at that. Yep.
Okay, go ahead. Your next
question. Is it true that when they seized my airplane, which I used for my business, they were required to give me a prompt post-seizure hearing? Is that your understanding? Is it?
Yes.
Okay. And is that one of your concerns, is that they seized the lifeblood of my ability to provide for my family and never gave me the due process of a prompt post-seizure hearing?
Yes.
Did you ever read in the court documents and find out from Mr. Robinson or Mr. Cole that the warrants, the affidavits used in the warrants to seize my airplane had been falsified, that all the evidence locations had been falsified to my guide area?
Well, when I talked with Robinson about representing you, I think the issues about the airplane were probably the most egregious. That's how I remember it.
Okay. Did you ever hear that even the warrants, not only did they not give me a prompt post-seizure hearing, but there was actually an error in the warrants they actually used to seize it. So, in other words, not only did they not give me a hearing, they also used false warrants to do so.
Objection. The question was, did he hear that? That's not relevant.
Is it your understanding that occurred?
That's not relevant. Objection.
What difference does it make whether he heard it or not?
Could that be part of the reason I didn't get due process? Is that they used false warrants?
The only way I know to answer that is that Mr. Robinson led me to believe that based on him as a criminal attorney, you have been denied due process regarding your airplane.
Okay, and so that was from Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Okay. Is it true that after I fired Mr. Robinson, is it true that you knew I hired an attorney by the name of Mark Osterman?
Well, I didn't know you did that so much later. I had nothing whatsoever to do with you hiring Mark Osterman.
Okay. Did you ever read any transcripts of my conversations with Mr. Osterman?
I think by that time I just started disengaging from... I don't remember anything with Osterman.
Is it true that kind of what happened with Mr. Osterman was what you were maybe afraid of if I hired a third attorney inside the state?
I don't remember.
And again, this may help me feel better about this. I want it on the record that I feel horrible about what I'm doing with Mr. DeLifka here, but I believe
that it
requires the state, our state, the integrity of our judicial system in the state compels me to do this. And that's...
Hey.
So...
I don't know where you're going.
Well, anyway...
What do you want this man to testify about? Ask him a question.
Okay. Is it true, and this may help me again, you've admitted that you testified to Judge Joannides, is that correct?
Yes.
And that was true testimony that you gave at that time?
The best I remember.
Yes. Okay. And so I'd like it on the record that on August 25th, 2010, that he testified in...
Seen the record. That part in the record already.
Okay, and I apologize. I don't know how this is supposed to go or how I do this.
Let me explain to you again. If it's already in the record, you don't need to go over
okay.
it.
Okay.
Get it in the record. It's there already.
Is it true, Mr. DeLifka, that one of the concerns you had is that, and you may have already answered this, is that when Cole had me give a statement, my statement was used to... I believe you used the words, increase the charges against me exponentially.
Objection. Relevance. What he thinks of what happened is not relevant. He's established he's not, he doesn't even know anything about criminal law. So it's not relevant.
Isn't that the truth, sir? Isn't that objection accurate?
I guess. Can I ask you this, is it true, Mr. DeLifka, that you have been a criminal defense attorney at one point?
I did misdemeanors for the Teamsters. DUIs, I did not do felonies.
Okay. Is it true, in your opinion, that never has there been a case in history that cries out more for outside intervention because I've been to all the major players?
I can't answer that.
Okay. And I'd just like to state that he testified to that on August 25th. Is it true I sold my soul for a deal and then Cole sold me down the river?
I don't know.
Okay. Other than an outright payoff of a judge or jury, it's hard to imagine anyone being sold down the river more.
Objection, that's not a question.
Sustained. Ask your next question.
Is it true with my plea agreement that my end of the bargain was not met? It was heads I win, tails you lose?
Objection. No personal knowledge from this witness relevance.
Same.
Okay. Is it true that you believe that the fruit of the poisonous tree started with the warrants that were used to seize evidence in my case?
Objection. He's already testified that he's not an expert in this field, not qualified to give an opinion.
Sustained. On
that question.
Next question.
Is it true that once you poison something like this, it's like a house without a foundation?
Next question.
Mr. Dulifka, is it true that one of the seminal issues in your belief is how did this case go on when a lot of it was built on a lie in a sworn affidavit?
Objection. Calls for speculation. Relevance.
Sustained. Next question.
Is it true, Mr. Dulifka, that if my attorney did right by me, the DA would take it out on them in other cases?
Objection. Calls for speculation.
I don't want you to speculate, but you can answer the question.
I don't. That's not necessarily true.
Okay, I'd just like to point out that he testified to that on page 56 of the testimony given with Judge Joannides.
My memory of that is actually that you told me that's what Cole told you, and that was a reiteration of that. I think you're cherry-picking from probably hours and hours and hours of our visit. You're taking out of context what I said. I'm not going to say that a DA is going to take out on a criminal lawyer just inherently do that. That's not. If I said that, I didn't mean
in my
like
case.
That.
In my case, did that appear like it may have happened or would have happened?
My memory is that you told me that Cole said that if he did it that way, that his specialty was fish and game cases, and that if he did your case a certain way, they would take it out on him and others. That's my memory.
Okay.
And that's Mr. Haig telling you what Mr. Cole said.
Yes.
Okay.
Your next question.
Is it true I had a series of situations in which everyone was doing things to protect everyone rather than me because there was a price to pay?
From this? Objection, this witness has no personal knowledge and it's irrelevant.
Sustained. Next question.
Does my case have shades of Selma in the 60s, where judges, sheriffs, even assigned lawyers are all in cahoots together?
Next question.
Is it true that corruption is the reason I have still not resolved my legal problems?
I don't know if it's corruption. I wouldn't say it's corruption. It just seemed like a lot of... I just don't understand it. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. And I'd like to point out that he testified to this page 59 and 60 on August 25th, 2010. Is it true that when my case came up on appeal, the court was sitting there looking at a pile of dung, and if they did right by me and reveal, you have the attorneys going down, you have the judges going down, and you have the troopers going down?
I don't know how to answer that question. That's...
Would you have ever stated that? That had the appellate court done the right thing?
You know,
judges.
I might have said something like that. Okay. You're just, again, you're cherry-picking. I said a lot of things to you just in an emotional time. I was trying to, and a lot of stuff that I think you're saying is you would say it and I might have just agreed. I don't,
okay.
You have hours and hours and hours of taped testimony of me when I'm half asleep, you're crying, I'm trying to be a good friend, I'm worried that you're going to do something stupid to yourself.
So I don't know what you're going to find that I might have said, Dave.
Okay. Is it true, and this is it, I mean, this will be the last question I have for is it, and I can show you it, is it true that you wrote a letter at some point about what you thought happened, you know, to, it starts out, to whom it may concern?
I did write something to the effect that, again, and to this day, sitting here again, I still am confused about so many parts of this case. And I wrote something to that effect.
Okay. And I'll just find it here. And I guess I can just have you testify. Is it true, okay, and this basically sums all this up. Is it true you are concerned about the, quote, outrageous process, unquote, with which the state of Alaska has prosecuted me?
I was concerned about it.
Okay. That's it. And
do you have any cross examination?
I do. So, Mr. Dolivka, you just said there was a question about the outrageous process with which Mr. Haig was prosecuted. What was outrageous about it?
Well, you got to remember my state of mind during this whole process. That was a very dark time on the Kenai Peninsula. And a lot of my concern with Haig's cases was a concern for everything that was going on down there. And I know that's irrelevant, but that would answer that question. It was not just David Haig's case.
Okay, so with respect to his case specifically, there was nothing that was outrageous about the prosecution. It's just generally what you say was happening made you feel that way. Is that right?
I think a lot of us in the Kenai Peninsula during that era felt that our judicial system down there was becoming unmoored.
Okay, that's not really my question.
Well, okay, then.
Well, you asked it.
Well, no, the question I asked was it wasn't specifically with respect to Mr. Haig's case, right?
Go ahead.
I didn't ask for a colloquy about the judicial system generally.
I am concerned about the judicial system in general.
But not specifically about Mr. Haig.
Well, it included Haig's. So,
but, so any case, the any prosecution was outrageous on the Kenai Peninsula
at
the time?
Some.
How many?
Well, and you got to remember, I served on a grand jury during this era. Which
we're not going to get into that.
Okay, well, then I can't answer your question. I was concerned about the system at the time, not every single case, some cases, and his case was one of them.
Okay. So,
and that's simply,
you testified that it is your lay opinion that Mr. Cole is ineffective. I want to ask you about that. Mr. Haig was charged with being a guide and taking wildlife on the same day that he was airborne, right?
Well, if he was okay, I don't remember. I just,
you've reviewed everything.
I've reviewed it. It's been many years ago, so I'm
okay. Let's say that's the case.
Okay, let's say it's the case.
All right. And the potential penalty for that offense is a 3-year to lifetime guide license revocation. Are you aware of that?
Well, I am now, I guess, if you say so.
So if Mr. Cole worked out a deal whereby Mr. Haig would be back to guiding within 1 year of the prosecution, less than a year of the date of conviction, even though the minimum for a guide taking wildlife same day airborne is a 3-year guideline suspension, would you say that would be a very good deal for a big game guide?
I don't know if it would or wouldn't. That would be
you
for,
don't know.
That would be for a criminal attorney to decide.
Okay. You can't form a lay opinion on that. If the minimum is 3 years to a lifetime revocation, putting someone out of business whether a one-year guide license revocation would be a good deal, you can't form a lay opinion about that?
No.
Okay.
All right.
And you said that his plane was taken without due process. You aware that his plane was seized pursuant to a warrant?
I'm basing the airplane, what I say about due process regarding the airplane, on what Mr. Robinson told me. So, again, I'm a layperson. I don't know, but a criminal attorney that I trust told me he was denied due process regarding his airplane.
So just so I'm clear on this, it's your lay opinion that his plane was taken without due process?
My lay opinion based on what a criminal attorney that I trust told me.
Okay. Are you aware of the language in AS 1605-195?
No, I'm not aware of that.
You're not?
No. As a layperson, I'm not aware.
Forfeiture of equipment used in big game guiding offenses.
No.
Are you aware of the language in 1605-190, which talks about the seizure?
I don't know that statute.
Okay. Are you aware that people and entities whose instrumentalities are seized pursuant to a warrant are able to petition the court for a prompt post-seizure hearing, that they have that ability in Alaska? Are you aware of that?
Well, that's the part I was told was amiss. Something about that part of it, that's where the due process was amiss.
So you are aware that that is due process that is available to everyone whose property is seized, right?
That's my understanding.
Okay. Are you aware that instead of petitioning to get the property back, it was decided to work out a deal whereby he, being the defendant, would only be suspended for 1 year, which is one-third of the minimum for the crimes for which he was culpable?
I'm not aware of that.
Had a lifetime revocation.
I'm not aware of that part.
You're not aware of that?
No.
Okay. Nothing.
Do you have any follow-up questions?
I'll try one. If Cole made, as the state said, offered me something that seemed kind of attractive, I guess let me ask you this. Did it ever come out that I gave up guiding for a whole year for this plea agreement also? Not only did I give a statement, but I gave up a year of guiding.
I don't remember any of the specifics right now.
If Mr. Cole, as the state said, had come to me with some deal, but we asked Mr. Cole if the state could break that deal, keep what we had given them, and then make a new deal, no matter how good the deal was originally, that would not be something you should do. Because even though it was attractive, you know, but the attorney said it couldn't be enforced, that the state could continue to break the deal and get more. Would that, in your opinion, as a layperson,
objection relevant?
You can answer if you can.
Well, you lost me with the complexity of your question. I don't get it.
If Mr. Cole came to me with a deal that seemed attractive but told me he couldn't enforce it if I went for it, even though it was attractive, wouldn't it be crazy to do it because they could take it away after you paid for it?
Objection. Assumes facts, not in evidence. This calls for speculation, and it's irrelevant.
Well, if it was exactly like that, that would make no sense, that you would plead to something that might be taken away from you.
Yes. So even though you may have something that you wanted, but they said there's nothing to keep them from taking it back after you maybe gave another statement or gave your house up or another airplane or your firstborn child, no matter how attractive it was, you would not go for it. Because there would be no guarantee that you would get it.
Well, let me try to make this as simple as I'm running out of ways to answer your question. Let me make it as simple as I can. The wheels came off. My understanding, you basically come to an end of your relationship with Cole, talk to Robinson, inquire to Robinson about what you're talking about. He led me to believe that that agreement was amiss and that he was going to rectify it. I really don't have any more to say than that. I relied on Mr. Robinson telling me that what had happened with your agreement was amiss and he was going to, quote, fix it. Beyond that, I don't know what else to say.
Okay, and your term fix, do you know if he was going to try to enforce the plea agreement, or do you have any idea of what he meant by fix?
Well, I guess rectify or make right.
And you may not know, and so in other words, you didn't know how he was going to rectify it. He just said he was going to rectify it in some manner.
Objection to hearsay, I guess.
Just, you can answer it so we can get this over with.
He seemed upset by what had happened. I was of the opinion that he was going to rectify, make right, whatever words you want to use, and I trusted him implicitly to do that because I viewed him as an excellent criminal attorney. So if he told me something was amiss, I believed it was, and I relied on it, and I believed he would make things right. That I can't get any simpler than that.
Okay. In your opinion, did Mr. Robinson make it right?
Well, I guess I don't really know how to... I'm confused about that by now because he said he was going to make it right. And then it started getting really gray to me as to what that meant. The whole case has gotten gray to me by now. It's just...
Okay.
Because it veered off from being about the plea agreement to all these collateral goings on. And that's where the case lost me, was the simplicity of Mr. Robinson telling me there was something amiss with the case and he was going to make it right. As a layperson, I could process that. But then there's all this collateral, FBI, all this other stuff just left my wife and me drained because I still to this day do not totally know what happened.
Okay. But just the large scheme of things is, to make it as simple as possible, you're concerned not only, I guess I'll put it this way, when you talked to Judge Hansen, after you told Judge Hansen or he investigated, was Judge Hansen concerned?
That's not admissible.
Okay. Anyway, I think that's it. And I'm done.
I assume.
I have no recross.
You made your excuse. Thank you. How many additional witnesses do you have? We're going to take a break here in a couple seconds. I'm just trying to get a sense of how many witnesses you have.
Potentially 4, not including myself, but I could probably get by with not calling them, but anyway.
It's your case. You, as I said to you yesterday,
okay, so
you have a finite amount of time prioritized.
So I can call another witness?
No, we're going to take a break so people can... So we'll be back at
11:15. 11:15, okay.
Please rise. Court stands in recess.